Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're taking a deep dive into this idea of post-truth.
Right.
We've got this really fascinating report from Scenario DNA.
Yeah.
And we're going to be talking all about how brands and policymakers are dealing with this world where truth is, well,
it's tricky.
It's a tricky concept. It's definitely a tricky landscape to navigate.
It really is.
So this report dives into something they call post-truth. What exactly is that, and how is that different from post-truth, which is something we've been hearing about a lot lately?
So the post-truth era was really about, like, exposing deception, you know, finding out who the liars were, trying to kind of pull back the curtain and show the manipulation.
Right.
But post-truth kind of acknowledges that, you know, misinformation is baked into all of our systems.
Okay.
The truth is very often contextual and changes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's less about... I guess you could say it's less about pointing at the liars and more about trying to understand how truth is built and negotiated in these very complex systems.
So I guess in a way, if post-truth was about kind of ripping off the mask,
yeah.
Post-truth is more about how do you kind of navigate and even transform the system itself.
Yeah, exactly. And the report actually uses the film They Live as a kind of an example.
Okay.
You know, the main character puts on these glasses and suddenly sees all of these messages of control.
Right, yeah.
So post-truth was kind of like putting on those glasses and seeing those messages.
Right.
Post-truth is about how do those messages get created in the first place? How are they put out there? And how do we maybe even change the system that's creating those messages?
Got it. So let's talk about brands and policymakers for a second. How do these entities operate in a world where you can't really say there is, like, one absolute truth?
Well, it really means that brands can't just, you know, make truth claims anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot more complicated than that. They really need to understand what's called semiotics.
Semiotics.
Yeah. And that's basically how words and symbols are interpreted within different cultural contexts.
Can you break that down a little bit?
Yeah. Semiotics is essentially, you know, the study of signs and symbols and how they're used and understood. So in this post-truth world, it means that a brand's message might be interpreted in totally different ways by different people.
Got it.
Depending on their cultural background and the connotations that those words and images have for them.
So the meaning of something isn't necessarily fixed. It can be, like, fluid and open to interpretation depending on who's receiving it.
Absolutely. So a message that a brand thinks is, you know, conveying one very clear idea might be taken in a completely different way by a different audience.
Can you give me a real world example of that?
Sure. One example is, you know, the whole debate around healthy food labeling. I mean, what does healthy even mean?
Right.
It's always changing and people are constantly arguing about it. So brands have to be really careful about how they use that term because it doesn't have just one meaning.
Right.
It can be interpreted differently by different groups.
So a message that works for one group might totally backfire with another.
Exactly. And we've seen that happen. Like, remember the controversy with Bud Light and the transgender influencer?
Yeah.
That whole campaign led to a huge boycott because a large part of their audience, you know, they just didn't resonate with them. It actually kind of pushed them away.
Right. So it seems like brands really need to think carefully about who they're talking to and what those messages might mean to different people.
Yes. You really have to consider the cultural context of your audience. It's crucial.
So how do you do that? How do you plan for all of these different potential interpretations and reactions?
So this is where strategic foresight comes in.
Okay, what is that?
It's basically, you know, trying to think ahead, trying to understand the future.
Got it.
So you have to look at these big trends, but you also have to pay attention to these smaller, subtle cultural shifts that are happening.
So you're saying it's about looking at the big picture and the small details at the same time.
Yeah. Exactly. And to do that, you need to be looking at both big data and small data.
Okay.
Big data gives you a sense of the overall, you know, sentiment,
right,
what people are thinking and feeling in general.
Okay.
But small data is really where you find those really interesting micro trends and the cultural nuances.
So could you give me a real world example of how that might work?
Sure. Think about the rise of AI generated influencers.
Okay.
That's a really interesting example of where strategic foresight comes in.
Mm.
So you've got these virtual influencers that are getting more and more sophisticated, and they're really blurring the lines between real and fake.
Right.
So brands that are thinking about working with these AI influencers need to really think ahead about the ethical implications.
Mm.
You know, what does it mean when you're promoting something using a being that's not even real.
Right.
What are the potential problems with that, especially when it comes to things like manipulation or promoting, you know, unrealistic beauty standards?
Right. So it sounds like brands are facing a lot of really complex challenges in this new world.
Yeah, it's not easy.
What about policymakers? How are they dealing with this post-truth world?
Well, for them, I think one of the biggest questions is, how do you address misinformation without resorting to censorship?
Right. That's tricky.
It's really tricky. You have to find a way to combat these false narratives while also protecting freedom of speech.
So how are they approaching that?
Well, they're starting to look at new models. One of the models that's getting some attention is community-based moderation.
Okay.
Like Meta, for example, is experimenting with this thing called community notes,
mm-hmm.
where users can basically contribute to the fact-checking process.
What?
So it's kind of this crowdsourced approach to identifying and flagging content that might be misleading.
So instead of having like one central authority deciding what's true and what's not, you're kind of relying on the collective intelligence of a community.
Yeah, exactly. But of course, there are always concerns with anything like this.
What kind of concerns?
Well, one concern is bias. How do you make sure that the community itself isn't biased?
Right.
And then there's also the risk of manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could people try to manipulate the system to promote their own agenda?
Right.
So it's still early days.
Right.
We're still trying to figure out if these kinds of approaches are going to be effective.
Yeah, it sounds like we're still very much in the early stages of understanding this whole post-truth world.
Absolutely. I mean, things are changing so rapidly. And that's actually one of the interesting things about this report. It dives into some potential future scenarios, kind of exploring different ways that truth and trust might evolve in the coming years.
Okay, well, that sounds like a great place to pick up in our next segment.
Huh.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we'll dive into those scenarios and explore what the future of truth might hold.
Sounds good. So these scenarios, they're not, you know, predicting the future or anything.
Right.
But it's more like, okay, here are some potential pathways. Here are some things that could happen.
Right.
And thinking about them can help us kind of anticipate and adapt to these changes that are happening around truth and trust.
Okay, so let's jump into these scenarios. Where do we start?
Let's start with what they call the algorithmic consensus model.
Okay.
So this scenario basically says that in the future, AI systems will be the main deciders of what's true and what's not.
So basically, instead of humans debating and arguing about what's true,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have algorithms doing it for us.
Pretty much, yeah. The idea is that AI could be really good at, you know, sorting through all the information out there,
yeah.
analyzing these competed narratives, and then giving us like a probability score
okay.
for different claims. Like, how likely is this to be true?
It sounds kind of efficient.
Right.
I mean, there's so much information out there.
Yeah.
Maybe this would help us cut through the noise.
That's the argument, yeah. But of course, there are always concerns.
Like what?
Well, bias is a big one.
Okay.
Even algorithms can be biased. I mean, it depends on what data you're feeding them, how the algorithm is actually designed, and even how the results are interpreted.
So who's controlling the algorithms?
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a pretty important question.
Absolutely. If humans are still the ones building and controlling these systems, then those human biases can easily seep in.
So we might end up with algorithms that are just reinforcing our existing prejudices and biases instead of actually helping us find the truth.
Yeah, that's a real danger. And the report actually points to some real-world examples of this. Like, you know, Google and OpenAI, they've both developed tools to try to verify content.
Right.
But there are concerns about how those tools could be used,
okay.
you know, to control what people see and think, especially when it comes to politics and stuff.
So maybe it's not as simple as just handing over the reins to the algorithms and hoping for the best.
Right. It's definitely something that needs a lot of careful thought and oversight.
Okay. What's the next scenario?
So the next one is called the hyperfragmentation of truth. And this one's kind of scary.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, basically, it's saying that those echo chambers that we're already seeing online, they're just going to get worse.
Okay.
It's like instead of having one shared reality, we're going to have all these different little realities.
So like splinter realities.
Yeah. And each group will have their own set of facts and their own way of interpreting things.
And I imagine that makes it pretty hard to communicate and understand each other.
Yeah. It would be incredibly difficult. I mean, how do you even have a conversation with someone when you're basically living in two different worlds?
Yeah. It sounds like a recipe for division and conflict.
It really does. And for brands and policymakers, it means that they would have to really understand these different groups.
Right, like their values, their beliefs.
Exactly. what works for one group might totally alienate another.
So you can't just have one message for everyone.
Yeah.
You have to tailor your approach to each specific group.
Yeah, it's a lot more complicated. And the report actually points to the rise of alternative social media platforms like, you know, Truth Social or Mastodon.
Right.
As a sign that this fragmentation is already happening.
So we're already starting to see this splintering of the online world.
Yeah, and it could get a lot more intense.
Okay, on to scenario number three.
Yeah, so this one is called Re-enchantment as a Strategy.
Re-enchantment?
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. Basically, it's saying that in the future, persuasion won't be about facts and logic anymore.
Okay.
It'll be about storytelling and appealing to people's emotions.
So instead of trying to convince people with data and evidence, you're trying to connect with them on a deeper, more emotional level.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, we're not just rational beings.
Right.
We're emotional beings.
Right.
We make decisions based on how we feel. We're drawn to stories. We connect with narratives.
So in this scenario, the most persuasive communicators will be the best storytellers.
Yeah, that's the idea. And the report uses the recent Hollywood strikes as an example of this.
Okay.
You know, the strikes, they didn't just focus on the facts and figures of the labor dispute.
Right.
They really tapped into these powerful narratives about creative resistance and worker solidarity.
And it worked. They were able to connect with a much broader audience because they were speaking to people's hearts as well as their minds.
Exactly.
Okay. What's next?
So the next scenario is decentralized truth networks.
What does that mean?
It's basically the idea that blockchain technology and decentralized AI could be used to create these peer-to-peer systems for verifying information.
So instead of having a few big institutions like, I don't know, the government or big media companies deciding what's true, you would have this more distributed system.
Yeah, and the idea is that it would be much more transparent. It would be harder for any one group to manipulate or control the flow of information.
So it's almost like a democratization of truth.
In a way, yeah. But of course, there are potential downsides.
Like what?
Well, one concern is that these decentralized systems might make it easier for fringe narratives and conspiracy theories to spread.
Oh, wait.
And then there's the question of moderation. How do you prevent the spread of misinformation in a system that's designed to be, you know, decentralized and resistant to control?
Well, it's kind of a trade-off, right?
Yeah. You gain transparency, but you might lose some control.
Got it. Okay, let's move on to the last scenario.
Yeah, and this one's called Reality Privilege and Information Asymmetry.
Reality privilege. That sounds a little ominous.
Yeah. This is the one that really makes you think.
Okay, what's it about?
Basically, it says that in the future, access to accurate information will become a luxury.
Okay.
Something that only the wealthy and powerful can afford.
So you're saying that there will be a gap between those who have access to the truth and those who don't.
Exactly. Like, imagine a world where the rich can pay for these, like, super personalized news feeds and premium fact-checking services.
Okay.
They're getting a very carefully curated and accurate view of the world, while everyone else is struggling to sift through a sea of misinformation.
That sounds incredibly unfair.
It is, and it could create even deeper divisions in society.
Yeah, I mean, if access to information is a privilege, then that just exacerbates all the other inequalities that we're already dealing with.
Right, and the report actually points to some early signs that this is already happening.
Okay, like what?
Well, we're seeing more and more news outlets moving to subscription models.
Right.
And there are even these premium fact-checking services popping up.
So you're saying that those who can afford it will have access to a higher quality of information?
Yeah. And that's something that we really need to be thinking about because it could have huge implications for society as a whole.
So these five scenarios, they paint a pretty complex picture of the future of truth. And honestly, some of them are pretty concerning.
Yeah.
It feels like we're at a really important moment. The decisions we make now about how we deal with information and technology, they're going to have a huge impact on what that future looks like.
Absolutely. And the report actually offers some guidance for brands and policymakers. It suggests some things that they can do to navigate this new world.
Okay, well, that sounds like a perfect place to pick up in part three. Okay, so we've talked about these potential future scenarios, and some of them are, well, they're kind of unsettling. But the report also offers some advice for brands and policymakers who are trying to navigate this whole post-truth thing. What are some of the key takeaways?
Yeah, I think the biggest emphasis is on adaptability and foresight. the organizations that can kind of anticipate these changes and be flexible enough to adapt to them, they're going to be the ones that succeed.
That makes sense. But what does that look like in practice? What can organizations actually do?
Well, one of the big things they talk about is cultural agility, especially for brands. They really need to get a deep understanding of semiotics and cultural analytics.
We talked about semiotics earlier, but how does that tie into this idea of cultural agility?
It means going beyond just collecting data. You have to analyze that data within its cultural context. You have to understand how the meaning of words, symbols, even colors can be totally different depending on the cultural group you're looking at.
So a campaign that might work really well with one audience could be a total flop or even offensive to another.
Exactly. So brands really need to invest in understanding those nuances. They need to go beyond just surface-level market research and really engage with diverse perspectives to understand how their messages are going to land.
The report also talks about narrative engineering. What is that?
It's basically acknowledging the power of stories.
Okay.
We all connect with stories, right? So it's about crafting narratives that are not only true, but also emotionally compelling and culturally relevant.
So it's not just about throwing facts and figures at people. You have to embed those facts within a story that people can actually connect with.
Right. And the report says that in this post-truth world, the most effective narratives are going to be modular, adaptive, and multi-layered.
What do those terms mean exactly?
Okay, so modular narratives are basically stories that can be easily adapted to different audiences and contexts. You have to think ahead about how your story might be interpreted by different groups and be prepared to adjust it. Adaptive narratives are stories that can evolve over time as the cultural landscape changes. So you're not just putting out a static message. You're having an ongoing conversation and adapting to the feedback you're getting. And then multi-layered narratives. These are stories that can speak to different values and perspectives at the same time. They acknowledge the complexity of issues and avoid these simplistic black and white framings.
It sounds like creating these kinds of narratives takes a lot of thought and skill.
It does. And it also brings up another important point from the report, which is building resilience against disinformation.
Okay, how do you do that? How can brands and policymakers prepare for and counter these disinformation campaigns?
Well, preemptive narrative engineering is a big part of it. Basically, you have to anticipate the attacks that might come your way. Think about the false narratives that might be spread about you and develop counter narratives in advance. You have to be ready to respond quickly and effectively.
So be proactive instead of reactive.
Exactly. But it's not just about being prepared. You also have to leverage technology to identify and combat misinformation. So things like AI-powered deepfake detection tools, decentralized verification systems, partnerships with fact-checking organizations.
Can you talk a little bit more about deepfakes? What are they and why are they such a problem in this post-truth world?
Deepfakes are basically videos, images, audio recordings that have been manipulated using AI to create fake content that looks real. They can be used to spread misinformation, damage reputations, all sorts of things. And AI is getting so good that it's becoming harder and harder to tell what's real and what's fake. So these deepfake detection tools, they use AI to analyze the media and look for signs of manipulation.
So it's kind of an arms race. The people spreading disinformation are using AI, and the people trying to stop them are using AI.
Yeah, it's a constant battle. And that actually leads to the final key takeaway from the report, which is AI integration.
How can AI be used to help us make sense of this whole post-truth world?
AI can be really helpful in understanding and responding to these complexities. For example, you can use AI for predictive modeling, try to anticipate emerging trends, assess potential risks. AI-powered sentiment analysis tools can help you understand how your messages are being received by different audiences, identify potential points of contention, and you can also use AI for real-time monitoring of the cultural landscape. That way you can adapt quickly to changing narratives and sentiments.
So it seems like AI is both part of the problem and part of the solution.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword for sure. It highlights how important it is to think about the ethics of AI development and to work together across different sectors to make sure that AI is used responsibly to promote truth and understanding.
Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into the world of post-truth. We've covered a lot of ground. We talked about the shift from post-truth to post-truth, the challenges it poses for both brands and policymakers, those five potential scenarios for the future of truth, and some concrete strategies for navigating this new reality.
It's definitely a challenging landscape, but I think understanding these dynamics and adopting these strategies can really empower people and organizations to find their way. The key is to be thoughtful, be skeptical, and to keep those lines of communication open so we can actually build understanding and trust.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on this important topic. I think it's a conversation we all need to be having.